Welcome to Mind the Gap.
Here's what we do. We will set up. This is Tunnel Vision. From planet to planet. Solar system to solar system. From galaxy to galaxy.
This is Mind the Gap with Jason Vass.
And I'm Gus Castanis.
Happy September and Labor Day weekend to all.
Yes, it's quite hot outside.
A scorcher. And we hope you're hydrating and staying cool and maybe in the water, pool, ocean, whatever.
Hydrate and stay away from the fires and get in the water. That's what we recommend.
Yeah, I mean, and be careful on the road. Don't drink and drive, all that.
Oh, yes,
kind of good
all
stuff.
That stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So we hope everyone is staying cool in this scorcher going on in L.A. right now. We open, as usual, with React by Jurassic 5, and we're just going to jump right into it, right?
Let's do it.
Yeah, we're starting. I don't know how important this is, but I'm doing it. This is, just as usual, we often start with passing.
And oh,
this,
no.
Yeah, this is Martin Roth. You may not have heard of him. He was a museum impresario who led London's Victoria and Albert Museum to great heights. He's died. And he's credited with transforming the V&A into a record-breaking, award-winning institution. So the esteemed museum manager and former director of London's Victoria and Albert Museum, Martin Roth, has died. According to the German press agency DPA, the 62-year-old Roth passed away in Berlin on the morning of Sunday, August 6th, after a battle with a serious illness. One of the most successful museum directors of the last decade, Roth is credited with transforming the Victoria and Albert Museum in London, which he helmed from 2011 to 2016, from a dutiful, dusty institution to a vibrant must-see destination in the British capital. During his tenure, the museum staged blockbuster shows such as Savage Beauty, dedicated to the late fashion genius Alexander McQueen, and the highly popular exhibition on David Bowie, organized together with the legendary musician in 2013. In 2016, the V&A was awarded the prestigious Art Fund Museum of the Year distinction. So really a terrific guy. A quote, Martin will be remembered as a man of prodigious energy, a director with a global reputation both within the museum world and beyond, a committed Europhile and cultural ambassador with a philosophical turn of mind, as well as a devoted husband and father. Museum's chairman, Nicholas Coldridge, CBE, wrote in a statement released by the V&A, adding that Martin made it his mission to raise the international profile of the museum. We will greatly miss him and are profoundly grateful for his considerable contribution to the V&A. So I think he was really worthy and worth mentioning. Now, shortly, yeah.
I think so as well.
Yeah, I figured you might. And then sort of a few days later, actually, 2 or 3 weeks later, 3 weeks, there was an article that I found, because I read a lot to pick things for this show. And
we do appreciate that.
I know you do. So here we've got this.
I'm sitting here appreciating right now.
Yeah, I bet you are. If you in between
okay.
Snoozing,
esteemed. I'm here.
Esteemed V&A director Martin Roth warns of the rise of right-wing populism in a posthumous book. The book, published weeks after his death, is based on conversations with his three adult children. And I just wanted to mention this because it kind of was on the heels of what I was just sharing with you. So the late museum director and art historian Martin Roth's final book was published August 28th, just over 3 weeks after his death, based on conversations with his three adult children. Viraid, Talk Back, is a part political manifesto, part personal reflection on the life and work of a lionized cultural leader. Motivated by the rise of right-wing populism worldwide, the former V&A museum director writes that he felt compelled to use his platform to issue a call to action. In the book, published in German, by edition Evangelische Gemeinde de Blatt, Roth recalls a difficult childhood growing up in post-war Germany, lessons he gleaned from researching his doctorate on cultural policy in the 1920s and 30s, he writes, can now be applied to the fight against xenophobia and right-wing fear-mongering. Quote, an extremely right-wing Europe has risen in front of our eyes, Roth warns in an excerpt published in Süddeutsche Zeitung. Where are our Christian values, quote-unquote, describing him as staunchly himself as staunchly European. Roth also criticizes the Brexit campaign and Britain's subsequent withdrawal from the European Union, which contributed to his abrupt departure from the Victoria and Albert Museum. Those who aren't committed against a return to old nationalist thinking, those who think someone else will prevent it, and those who think politics is too complicated are all implicating themselves as complicit, he argues in the book. Museum director was diagnosed with cancer just a few weeks after he left the V&A, dedicated his life to using art to bridge cultural and political divides. During his five-year tenure at the museum, he initiated new branches in China, Dundee, and East London. Excerpts from transcripts of recorded conversations between Roth and his children Clara, age 20, Roman, 27, and Masha, 28, form the core of the text. Quote, it is no longer my generation that will effect change. We must speak to the next generation, Roth reportedly told his children, according to his eldest daughter's account in Deutsche Welle. At the time, he was already very ill and knew he didn't have long to live. The book's publisher did not immediately respond to a request about the children's role in the book's posthumous publication. In this unusual account of his life, work, and beliefs, Roth consciously portrays himself as a concerned idealist who believes in art as a vehicle to effect social change. Quote, I am convinced that art and culture are indispensable foundations for peaceful social and democratic coexistence, he writes. The publisher has not yet confirmed whether there are plans to publish an English language version of the book following its release in German. So, just a quickie about an important museum director, and boy, did he transform the V&A into just a fabulous museum in London. Now we're going to read, I'm going to read this one because it kind of ties in with what's going on in LA right now. This is actually dated August 7th. Searing temperatures in Italy forced the temporary closure of Florence's Uffizi Gallery. The heat wave currently sweeping Europe, aptly known as Lucifer. Did you know that, that they actually named that?
Oh, it's nice that they have names for heat waves. It would be.
Well, I mean, as you know, in France a few years ago, many people died, and there's been a monster heat wave across Europe.
Sure,
and they named it like you could have a hurricane naming or a.
I mean, I live in California, and we also get heat here. So, I mean.
Well, you can name this. Go ahead. Why don't you name this?
Well, I just don't think I'm
capable.
No, I'm capable. Anyone can name anything. But
okay,
I don't just
so
think people would just
name
look
this
at
puppy.
Me like, we'll call it Raphael.
Okay, you know, you could make it heat related. Does Raphael make you hot?
Not yet.
Okay, but so think of something really hot.
Sophia Loren?
Oven. Okay. Yeah, Sophia Loren, hot. Younger Sophia Loren, but yeah. Okay, older. Yeah, I didn't mean to make her young. Yeah. So, anyway, they named it Lucifer, and I don't know if you saw this. There was an article in the New York Times in the last couple of weeks about the great, because of these temperatures where it's been 105 in the vineyards. It's hastened the picking of the grapes, and all of the grape harvests are altered and changed because of this enormous heat waves and droughts that have been affecting Europe, unbeknownst to us. It's kind of like we have Houston and the hurricane here, but in Mubai,
and so the whole world's melting, and people are worried. Because
well, I mean,
it's
also
really
it's either
enough.
Raining or melting. Yeah, in Mumbai, over 1,200 people have died. You know, we're not going to say that. It's a greater than 45 or 50.
I love the concern is when the wine just
hey,
no
look,
longer
wine
as
is,
crazy.
Hey, look, wine
like,
is
oh my God.
Wine is important.
People are dying, but my wine isn't really as good
well,
as
we're
it
not
used
just
to be.
We're not saying it's comparable. We're just saying I read how the heat is affecting so many different things, including agriculture.
Oh, all right. I'm sorry.
All right. The heat
Keep
wave
going.
Currently sweeping Europe, aptly known as Lucifer.
Lucifer.
Forced the closure of the Uffizi Galleries.
The devil.
Yes, that's right. This was about 3 weeks ago, around August 7th. The gallery, which is Italy's most visited art museum and is particularly crowded during the high summer tourist season, closed around 1:30 p.m., about 5 hours earlier than it normally does. The Uffizi's director, Ike Schmidt, explained that the water levels of the river Arno, which supplies the gallery's air conditioning system, dropped so low that the system was unable to run. More than half of Italy's 20 regions are primed to declare a state of emergency to tackle the ongoing drought. temperatures in Florence rose to 102 degrees. Armed with additional water supplies, the Uffizi home to Sandro Botticelli's The Birth of Venus, painted in 1486, and Leonardo da Vinci's Adoration of the Magi, painted in 1481, opened Saturday morning at 8:15 as usual. Excessive heat and moisture can distort artwork, causing dimensional changes, chemical reactions, and biodeterioration. These are some of the most famous paintings in the world. I mean, have you been to the Uffizi Gallery? You've been there, haven't you?
I think I have.
Yeah, I mean, this is just like, you have temperatures over 100 degrees, not normal anywhere, more normal here. We live in a high desert, but this is extraordinary, and when you have very valuable pieces of art, they are clearly heavily affected. They need to be in, you know, really, okay, what's it say here? Generally, paintings must be kept at 70 degrees Fahrenheit and at 55% relative humidity. It is estimated that a mere 4 degrees Celsius or 7.2 degrees Fahrenheit increase in storage temperature may be reflected in a 40 to 50% reduction in the work's lifespan.
Oh, and that's a big concern. Like,
well, yeah, you've had something that's 500 years old and suddenly you've halved its life expectancy.
But also, like in Texas recently, we had chemical plants that just blew up because the air conditioning wasn't supplied by the energy that was cut off by the amazing...
Yeah, we have got a little bit too much concentration of those for fire.
So, I mean,
there.
It's like there's artwork and then there's...
And then there's gas. What's, you know, really gas is the most important thing. You're right. Who cares
about
artwork?
Well, no, but it's like I wouldn't want to be in Texas right now.
I don't want to say anything against Texas, but I don't think I really ever really think about being there. Okay. Having said that...
By the way, anyone out there, we love Texas.
Yeah, terrific. But, you know, passing through. Schmidt assured the world that the temperature and humidity levels never exceeded recommended levels, and that closing the gallery was a preventative measure to protect the artwork as well as the comfort of the visitors. The good news is that since we stopped people flowing into the galleries in the absence of human visitors, who are each their own little humidifiers and ovens, and with additional water deliveries, we were able to power up the system and stabilize the temperature and humidity levels, Schmidt says. Visitors were fully reimbursed for their tickets, but the director said the museum incurred no significant financial loss. In the past few months, we've actually exceeded our expectations, so this does not affect us at all. Severe weather warnings have been issued for several European travel destinations, including Italy, due to the heat wave. Temperatures have been projected to reach upwards of 40 degrees Celsius or over 140 degrees Fahrenheit, and the European Meteorological Alert Network, Meteo Alarm, warned of dangerous weather in 9 other countries, including Croatia, Hungary, and Poland. For its part, the Uffizi is already considering contingency plans in the future. Schmidt says, quote, the Boboli Gardens, which the Uffizi also controls, has its own water supply. So if the summers get hotter and hotter and the Arno tide lower and lower, the next step would be to construct a pipeline from the Boboli Gardens to the Uffizi. Anyway, just sort of sharing, you know, a little bit about the V&A.
It's good to know that we can keep our artwork safe while the rest of the world is destroyed.
And let's go right to this, which is we're going to do some blurbs that I wanted to do last month. And then when I was going to revisit them, I decided we'd move on. So we're going to do blurbs this month. So Spanish Town desperately wants its own Banksy. A Spanish beer brand is funding a campaign to get the street artist to participate in an urban arts festival in the town of Ferrol. A request for his presence has appeared on billboards across the United Kingdom and in slew of advertisements in national newspapers. And this is in a publication called Cerveza 1906. And then here, you know, we've got PST starting in a couple of weeks. Hey, everybody, Pacific Standard Time, ALALA, which stands for Latin American Latino Art in Los Angeles, is opening at the Getty, the Hammer, LACMA, MOCA, the weekend of September 16th. And so Pacific Standard Time is opening, and LA museums go free for PST. As part of PST LALA, admission to more than 50 museums across Southern California, including the Hammer Museum, the California African American Museum, and LACMA, will be free on Sunday, September 17th. So you should bring your kids, bring your friends, bring your girlfriends, your partners, your lovers, your enemies. Bring and go to all the museums. Well, at least the Hammer, LACMA, and some others that will be free Sunday, the 17th of September, to celebrate Pacific Standard Time, Latin American Los Angeles, Latino art. It's going to be fabulous. And there are 65 participating galleries. And you can go to any number of sites like Curate LA or any number of other places, the LA Times, and see all of the events associated with it. So with that in mind,
yes,
we're going to talk about something in LA. Is Los Angeles still the sort of city that pursues hugely ambitious cultural and architectural projects?
I'd like to think so.
Or is it a city that's running out of room and chastened by increasing aggressive opposition to new development?
Wow, that's also true.
Preliminary designs for the Berggruen Institute, just north of the Getty Center, suggests it's both.
Ha!
Or maybe navigating a slow transition from one to the other.
To the other, yes.
On a spectacular site covering 447 acres.
That's huge.
The billionaire philanthropist Nicholas Berggruen is planning, as the new headquarters, for the seven-year-old institute that bears his name, a low-slung and generally restrained campus of buildings. It'll be designed by Swiss architecture firm Herzog & de Meuron with LA's Gensler and sit within a landscape by Michel Desvigne and Inisa Hanche. Berggruen gave the LA Times an advanced look at the preliminary designs, which he said he planned to file Wednesday, or this is, I don't know when that Wednesday is, with the LA Department of City Planning. They've executed in what Herzog and de Meuron co-founder Jacques Herzog called a basic, very archaic register to be mostly of concrete and untreated wood. The proposal has the feel of a last-of-its-kind design. It recalls an L.A. that has just about disappeared, a city of grand projects built on huge swaths of open land. At the same time, it reflects the limits that come with both distrust of new construction, especially on the west side, and a rising ecological anxiety. The Institute, which is also planning a smaller satellite location in the MacArthur Park section of Los Angeles, is a public policy think tank of sorts focusing on good governance in California, among other subjects. In the new campus, it plans to make space available for scholars and residents, as well as limited public programs. The designs call for a linear park, what the architects call a gardened plinth, made of three sections and strung along a ridge pointing south, offering views over the Pacific Ocean in one direction and toward downtown and the San Gabriel Mountains in the other. Near the northern end of the ridge will be a residence for Berggruen and his family. In the middle will be a village, quote-unquote, for visiting scholars, consisting of 15 units with private patios and gardens and partially sunk below ground. And to the south will be the larger structure, lifted 12 feet above ground and known as the frame, holding meeting rooms, offices, study spaces, and other facilities around a garden courtyard. Emerging from the frame, I'm talking about this because this is on a 447-acre site, and it's by one of the top architects in the world, and this is an addition to LA, so that's why we're talking about this. Emerging from the frame will be a pair of spheres, the larger one holding a 250-seat lecture hall, and the smaller a waste storage tank. Good to know. Berggruen and Herzog both stressed their interest in maintaining a light footprint on the site just west of the 405 freeway in the Santa Monica Mountains, with at least 90% of the land remaining undeveloped. Residential community of Mountain Gate, directly north of the Institute campus, will be keenly interested to see what Berggruen plans to build. During a walk across the site on a recent afternoon, by the way, this article came out of the LA Times, during which a rattlesnake reared up out of nowhere on a dusty path and rattled loudly as warned against bringing too much activity here too quickly, Berggruen tried to sum up its appeal. Appear you're in the middle of LA and you're totally removed. Both, he said. It's this quality, this combination of seemingly unlimited space and proximity to the rest of Los Angeles, that sets the project dramatically apart from a city that is growing increasingly dense and vertical, one that now spends a good deal more time and architectural energy rebuilding than building from scratch. The site, formerly a landfill, has been engineered to a degree its ridges flattened in the 1980s. Berggruen said he would limit the campus largely to what a press release called these previously graded areas, quote unquote. But for the most part, it appears vast and untouched. Berggruen said walking trails across the site will be actively maintained and kept open to the public. It's one of the last really amazing sites in the city, Herzog said, not only because of the views, but because it's a kind of wilderness. As such, it calls for a generally restrained architecture, he added. We want to make a contribution to a sustainable way of building, not just another golf course or luxury five-star hotel, another flashy piece. This place is very specific to Los Angeles, in the good sense, but also in a not-so-good one, lacking water and all of those things, unquote. Herzog compared the evolving design to a monastery. Quote, it will be a place of knowledge, of research, of curiosity, and also some privilege at the same time. It will be something that ideally helps to make our societies work again. A mission the architect said was especially important at this difficult moment when nobody knows where things will go politically and even what democracy will be, unquote. The tricky part, he said, will be splitting the difference between a public and private institution. Quote, can we build in our cities, campuses, or specific zones or sites that are closed off, but nevertheless can have a fruitful impact on the rest of the city That, for us, is the key question with this particular project. On the one hand, you don't want the neighbors to be concerned that there will be a fully public place that will be noisy, etc. On the other, you don't want to create a place that is completely closed off, that is a kind of a gated community, unquote. Architecturally, Herzog said he's interested in a contrast between the rough concrete and wood forms that will predominate and the delicacy of the spheres. Quote, we want to use the spheres in the purest possible way to make them almost immaterial, not an expression of new technologies or a heroic engineering solution. They shouldn't show any sign of effort or structural expression. We were just interested in this idea of the purity of the form and its innocence, so to speak. He said the project as a whole would be characterized by a relatively held back formal language. He compared it along those lines to the firm's Parish Art Museum on Long Island, which they designed in 2012, and its new hotel in New York City for Ian Schrager, Public. In its largely unadorned and muscular concrete form making, it also has clear similarities to Herzog and de Meuron's proposed apartment, retail, and hotel complex in LA's Arts District. Burgoyne said the campus would be complete within 5 years, quote, if we don't run into too much trouble. The reason I read that was because who the heck knows that's going on? So I wanted to talk about a 447-acre site and just bring that to everyone's attention in case you weren't seeing that. I would like to also...
Well, that's quite a large site.
Huge. And
am I allowed in there, or I get the feeling that I'm not?
Well, I think... they said the trails
privilege.
Would be open to the public, so that we would
at
be able
hours?
To... I'm going to have to look up and Herzog and de Meuron's proposed apartment, retail, and hotel complex for the LA Arts District and read about that, because that really is kind of, you know, more applicable to all of us and our ability to check that out. All right.
Well, it's really important to have shopping near art, because...
Well, hotels and...
Shopping, art, hotels, massage.
Restaurants.
Happy...
Massage.
Happy endings.
Where are you going?
Just happiness. Just pure monetary happiness.
Well, it all comes from inside, though, doesn't it? Isn't inner happiness...
Well,
you cannot find it from the exterior source?
You're talking about that. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, sorry. Yeah, okay. You went to... Happy endings. This is that was good. That
nobody,
was good.
Everybody likes happy ending, right?
Everybody. You mean like all sort of fairy tales are happily ever after?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yes. You know, like there's no.
We don't die. We go to heaven.
Okay.
Sorry.
All right. So talking about more art blurbs, there's a disused DC tunnel. Did you hear about this?
No, I have not. Tell
there's
me.
There's a disused Washington DC tunnel which was converted into an art space. DuPont Underground and. An abandoned trolley station in the DuPont Circle neighborhood of Washington, D.C. has been transformed into a successful experimental cultural space that draws 3,000 visitors each month. That's in the New York Times. You can look that up to read more about that. I'm not reading these. That other article is kind of lengthy. I'm trying to get away from the lengthy reads.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So there's a fabulous DuPont Underground, which is an abandoned trolley station that you could read. It's from the New York Times. Okay, NADA. The New Art Dealers Association New York moves to West Soho. The annual fair held during Armory Week, March 8th through 11th, will move to a slightly smaller venue down the street in West Soho. Skylight Clarkson Square, located at 550 Washington Street. It's a short drive from Piers 92 and 94 where the Armory Show is held. That's from Art News. I would share that in case you're going to be in New York and you hit the Armory Fairs.
Yes, you should go to that.
Yeah, this is an art program, and so we talk a lot about art and other stuff too. Here's one that I was going to read a lengthy thing, but... Prior to the show, I actually talked about what I was going to do, which is rare for me. And guess, nah, don't go there. So anyway, I'm just going to read the blurb.
All right.
Yeah, and you're the censor. All right. Yeah, you're the guy.
Well, Mr.
Endings of Happy. Was Nabokov's Lolita inspired by Dolly? A comparative literature professor at Harvard has come up with an incredible and plausible theory that Nabokov's classic may have actually been inspired by a little-known short story penned by Dolly called Reverie, an Erotic Daydream. And that was from a site called NewsHour. And I went to NewsHour, and I read the article, which really caught me. And I was going to read it, but you don't want me to. So.
No, read it. Let's go ahead. Talking about our
If we have room at the end. Nah, if we have room at the end, you know. You don't like Lolita. So to me, it's an important
one. Well.
Yeah, I know. Here's something else. Since we were sort
that
of
movie,
talking,
that movie, the movie grossed me out. The book was
you
worse.
You said the book, yeah. I really think he's a brilliant writer. So to me, I just
yeah. He
with
nailed
you.
He nailed child molestation. He got it.
To me, he just okay. If to me, he just nailed desire. Okay, if you see it in this, I mean, yeah, there's aspects to it that clearly are prurient. And I'm not saying, and we love Texas, I'm not saying anything against anybody or anything, but to me, it was just more about a man's inner workings and his desire.
Don't have sex with minors.
Yeah, I mean, really, when they come up from being underground and they've got their hard hats and they're covered with soot, you just don't want to be around a minor. Just bathe them and feed them.
After that,
M-I-N-E-R.
They can be quite sexy after that.
All right, here's something from the art world. Hold on to your polka-dotted hats. Tokyo's getting a Kusama Museum in October of this year. The new institution has managed to remain extraordinarily low profile. Okay, so this article was published August 11th. So Yayoi Kusama has built a museum dedicated to work in the Shinjuku section of Tokyo, and it is scheduled to open October 1st, 2017, according to a Japanese press release issued yesterday. Somehow the artist has managed to keep the project very hush-hush until now. The five-story museum, a white, large-windowed, curved structure, was built by architecture firm Kumi Seki and completed in 2014. The institution will be led by director Tensei Tatebata, president of Tama Art University and director of the Saitama Museum of Modern Art. The second and third floors of the museum will be dedicated to presentations of Kusama's paintings, sculptures, and other works, while the fourth floor will be dominated by her infinity rooms and other wildly popular installations. The top floor will house a reading room and archival material, time tickets, which will cost 1,000 yen or $9.18, will go on sale. Where they went on sale August 28th. The museum plans to host two rotating exhibitions annually. The inaugural show, Creation is a Solitary Pursuit, Love is What Brings You Closer to Art, on view October 1st through February 25th, 2018, will be devoted to a recent series of paintings, My Eternal Soul, quote unquote. The brightly colored series, which includes images of eyes, organic forms, and faces, debuted at Victoria Mural Gallery in London in 2016. News of the museum's imminent opening was reported this week by the Japanese site Spoon and Tamago, which notes that in 2014, a blogger posted shots of the museum in progress with Kusama's paintings visible through the windows. Curiously, the museum retained its low profile despite a passing mention in a Washington Post profile of the artist published in February of this year. A spokeswoman for David Zwirner Gallery, which represents the artist, confirms that the museum has been in the works for some time, but says Kusama, quote, wanted to keep it as a surprise for her fans, unquote. Kusama's fame rivals that of almost any living artist. Her shows routinely draw lines around the block, and her works are among the most Instagrammed art in the world. In its 2014 museum attendance survey, the art newspaper called her the poster girl for the globalization of contemporary art, unquote. When the Hirshhorn Museum and Sculpture Garden in Washington, D.C. recently mounted a Kusama exhibition, its membership increased by a whopping 6,566%.
That's a lot.
A touring show featuring her infinity rooms is currently on view at the Seattle Art Museum through September 10th. And did you see it? It was here in L.A. at the Broad Museum.
I did not.
I saw it in London at the Tate Gallery. I also saw it here at the Broad Museum. She's absolutely incredible. What's amazing is that as a young woman, her family was in the seafood business, and she watched them bring the boats in and haul the nets. And her early work was Medusa, jellyfish, and strange and amazing underwater flora and fauna that she drew. Early watercolors, extraordinary. And then she went into all kinds of other work. She moved to New York. She became highly westernized in a way, even though she went everywhere to kimono and blew everyone's minds in the 60s. She got to know Joseph Cornell, the guy who made the boxes. Much older than her, they became lovers. And when he died, she went into a tailspin and institutionalized herself and has spent the rest of her life, 40 plus years, in an institution in Japan from a wealthy family. I'm just doing this off the top of my head. I mean, look up Kusama, amazing artist, Japanese, one of the most important in the world, and now has a museum. Like, she does that, all that polka-dotted stuff. Get your polka-dotted hats out. It's a Kusama Museum opening October of this year. When you go to Tokyo, check it out.
Don't have polka dotted hats, but I will be looking for them now.
Well, be sure to get them. All right.
I will, and I'm sure in the future there will be a lot more places where you could buy those wonderful hats.
Anything related to Kusama.
Yes.
Okay, so we've got little blurbs. We're just going to do a whole bunch of little blurbs, no long articles. Okay.
Blurbs.
Okay. Now on the heels of V&A, we talked about the Victoria and Albert Museum. Here's a current article. The V&A chief apologizes to breastfeeding mother. After she was asked to cover herself while breastfeeding at the London Museum, a woman took to Twitter to point out the irony of the request, considering the V&A's numerous depictions of nude women. Tristram Hunt, the current V&A director, then personally and publicly apologized on Twitter. That was in The Guardian. ArtLogic announces U.S. expansion. The London-based...
That's it. We just get that little... Blurb.
That's it.
All right. Yeah. Keep going. All right.
Yeah,
this is how it works.
We're just going to fire it out.
We're going to fire it. Boom.
Yeah, yeah. I mean,
next.
If you want it, we
next.
Can talk
next.
About it.
No, no. Go, go.
ArtLogic announces U.S. expansion. The London-based firm, which designs databases and websites, is formally expanding to the U.S., adding new clients, including Marion Goodman, Gagosian Gallery, Elizabeth D., and the Marciano Art Foundation, whose museum is in town. I don't know if you've gone to it. Check it out. It's not part of PST, but check it out. That was in the art newspaper. Okay, here's one that you're going to love. Here's some gossip. Dasha Zhukova and Roman Abramovich split.
No.
Yeah. Yeah. The Russian billionaire.
Go on.
The Russian billionaire and the Garage magazine founder. That's Dasha Zhukova. He's a huge art collector. He married her, and they started this fabulous thing called the Garage in Moscow. It's like a giant museum, contemporary art. It's very important. He's big time. So the Russian billionaire and the Garage magazine founder, who built an enviable art collection, are separating after a decade of marriage. In a statement, they say they are committed to jointly raising their children and will continue to work together as co-founders of the Garage Museum of Contemporary Art in Moscow and the New Holland Island Cultural Center in St. Petersburg. That was in page 6. I guess they got that from the New York Post. But, you know, that's a big deal because they're very important in the contemporary art world and part of the Russian art scene. And so that split is kind of, you know, worth noting.
Well, is it one of those, I believed in love and now I don't believe in love anymore?
Hey, I don't know them. I don't know anything about them. I just know what they do and how important the Garage is and they're
all right,
important collectors.
We're just doing a little quick hitters.
So apparently, go to page 6.
Page 6.
And read more about that. That's the New York Post.
Look it up.
And next. Punch
come on.
And
come
Abramovich.
On. We gotta hurry through this. Come on.
Okay. LA Art, LA, Los Angeles.
LA. Yes.
Yeah. Awards $3 million to cultural nonprofits.
That's a lot of money.
Over the course of the next year, the Los Angeles Department of Cultural Affairs will give $3 million in grants to some 258 organizations and festival producers. LACMA, that's the Los Angeles County Museum of Art,
yes,
on Wilshire Boulevard. The A&D Museum, that's the Art and Design Museum.
Yes.
And the Hammer Museum are among the beneficiaries. That was a press release. All right.
Wow, that's it. That's
yeah,
it.
Yeah, that's it.
You're
not reading depth. No more depth.
I get no money. I get no money out of that, I'm sure.
Yeah, okay, but just, no, you're not one of the 258 organizations and festival producers and nonprofits, okay? It's all nonprofits. You're in this for happy endings and profits. Okay.
No, not me.
Okay, Crooks posing
as... I've been tremendously unsuccessful.
Well, yeah. Okay, join that. I'm with you. Let me carry your robe as you get into the ring. Crooks posing as city workers steal street art. I mean, how's that for a headline? Crooks posing as city workers steal street art.
Yes.
Equipped with the vague authority that comes with wearing a high-vis jacket and carrying a ladder, two thieves removed about 15 works of street art by artist Invader from the streets of Paris in the last couple of weeks. They told passersby they were working for City Hall, where a formal complaint has now been filed against these mystery thieves.
That's genius.
That was Hyperallergic. So you can go to Hyperallergic and find that article. Artist commission for Battersea Station. The first commissions to create outdoor works for London's Battersea Power Station development has been awarded. Jesse Wine will create works inspired by Henry Moore's reclining figures. Well, Hafendi Anur will produce a site-specific series of columns. That's from The Guardian. You can look that up. Hirshhorn. We mentioned Hirshhorn earlier. Hirshhorn to fete Yoko Ono with a one-night performance.
All right.
On September 17th of this year. It's 2 Sundays from now. A concert featuring an all-woman lineup, including Kim Gordon, Gang Gang Dances, Lizzie Bougatsos, and More Mother, spelled M-O-O-R, More Mother, will be held at the D.C. Museum in honor of Yoko Ono's pioneering work in sound and performance art.
Yay. Love Kim Gordon.
All right, here's another one about PST.
Keep going.
PST La La could change art history forever.
That's
the
long,
headline.
That's a long time.
Yeah, I mean forever, yeah.
Yeah.
The organizers of Pacific Standard Time La La, which opens in a couple of weeks, plan to measure success less by tourist dollars generated and more by art historical impact. Quote, this will change art history by including in the canon much more Latin American art than what is usually considered. Quote unquote, says Getty Chief Executive Officer James Cuno. And that was in TAN, T-A-N. Latin American galleries launch a co-op in L.A. The condo model strikes again, this time in Los Angeles. The Mexico City-based dealer, Brett Schultz, is setting up a year-long cooperative in which five Latin American galleries will present rotating shows in a space in Glendale, boosting their international presence without breaking the bank. And that was from the Art newspaper. Glendale, your neck of the woods.
Glendale,
goes.
California?
Glendale, California.
My.
My goodness.
Where?
I don't know where. We'll find that out. To be reported.
Okay.
London Garden Bridge project scrapped. I guess they wanted to do a High Line. Forget that. The
no.
$260 million pedestrian bridge over the River Thames has been officially abandoned, but not before $48 million of public money had already been spent on the project.
All
London's
right.
mayor, Sadiq Khan, ultimately refused to pay the bridge's steep annual maintenance costs. So a High Line in London canceled after $48 million.
You know, they're supposed to build a bridge over the LA River here in Glendale to the park. It's a big project. I don't think it's that much.
Has it been earmarked? Did they, are the funds allocated?
Well,
did
they
break ground?
They didn't call me. Repeated phone messages are unreturned.
Where did you hear about this? Was this reported in the news?
It
did
was,
you read about
no,
it?
No, it was it
local
was
scuttlebutt?
Scuttlebutt.
Oh, okay.
I talked to the people along the river.
Okay.
The Riversiders.
When was that? Recently?
Recently, yes.
Mm-hmm, okay.
Supposedly, it's a big thing because I've lived here in Glendale for a few years, and I live right across the street, right across the river from that big park, Griffith Park, and there's no way to get there by foot. You have to go all the way around one side or all the way around the other side where the cars go, and if you're on foot, there's no way to get there, and it seems kind of ridiculous in this day and age of modernization and where we're trying to get simplified that you have to take a car to get over there, which is just over there.
And you could ride your bike if they had bike
ride
paths.
Ride your bike.
You could just
they have bike
walk,
bits.
Ride,
yes,
skate,
yes.
Any number of methods for getting
this is
there.
The future.
Is this going to be a bridge for cars too, though?
No.
This is a pedestrian?
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Yeah.
Did I tell you too quickly?
Yeah.
You know, we should probably play a song.
Yeah, let's play a song.
I've decided we're going to play Fire on the Mountain by the Grateful Dead.
Terrific.
Because it's there.
All right, Fire on the Mountain, and it literally is. So,
oh, yes, because right across.
I mean, did you
there.
Not get the. You picked that without quite realizing this synaptic sense that you innately
yes,
have.
There is actually a fire.
We'll be back in a few minutes, folks.
Hopefully, the fire will be out by then.
The barroom glow.
You jostled the microphone
that
there.
That was Fire on the Mountain by the Grateful Dead,
and
off of Shakedown Street.
Yeah, this is
one of my favorite songs that they ever recorded, and which coincidentally became one of their greatest jam songs years later, thankfully.
What year did they first record that?
They recorded that? I was in college. Must have been 79.
Okay.
Something like that. Oh. Yeah, I saw the album recently. Robert Crumb did the artwork for the cover of the album, which is just amazing. And of course, we know the history there, San Francisco and all that. We are doing art here. Keep going.
And good mention of Robert Crumb. Well done.
We love Mr. Crumb.
You know that this year has been the 50th anniversary of the Summer of Love.
That's right.
And there was a fabulous exhibition.
They both were there. Grateful
the
Dead and Mr.
All, yeah, so Crumb. And
Mr. Crumb was there too.
Rick Griffin and Stanley Mouse and Moscoso and all of the fabulous artists that are associated with this, all the work for Fillmore East and Fillmore West and the Avalon Ballroom.
We have really good friends that know a lot about that artwork, don't we?
We certainly do. And there was an exhibition which just recently closed at the DeYoung Museum in San Francisco. I missed it, unfortunately, and I'm going to get that catalog for sure. I've got to order that.
We had a really good friend in New York who collected all those posters a long time ago.
Psychedelic Solution, Jake Habercaster.
Yes.
Yeah. So he sold it, and God bless him. He sold his entire collection. It was really fabulous. He got much of it from Bill Graham before he died in that helicopter crash, unfortunately. As you know...
We reveal stuff here.
Yeah, as you know, next year will be the 50th anniversary of Woodstock.
Oh, my gosh.
So now we've had this year... 1967, 2017, the 50th anniversary of the,
Summer of Love.
The Summer of Love. And now we've got...
Haight-Ashbury.
And now we've got Woodstock. So we're going to see a lot. I would think next year there's going to be a series of exhibitions, of which I should probably think of one. To create one of about Woodstock and Woodstock related. That's a good idea. I should commemorate that somehow.
You know that at my doctor's office, one of the doctors, orthopedic surgeons, used to be in the band Sha-Na-Na, and he was at Woodstock. So
be sure to mention that if you have.
I've seen the tickets, and I think to myself, he said to himself, "Well, how can I top this?" Orthopedic surgery, absolutely.
Helping people.
Yes.
So we've got more stuff, just these blurbs we're going to read. They're not lengthy, but they're just information that we're sharing. Okay, Big Ben. To fall silent during
the
renovation.
Clock? The yes. clock?
Yeah, did you not hear this?
No, not Ben Roethlisberger.
Yeah, no. The iconic Westminster Bell will go quiet for 4 years. While the clock undergoes restoration, the longest period of silence since it first chimed in 1859.
Well, if you had asked me, I would have thought it went back farther, so I'm not really shocked.
Okay, Big Ben will sound its obad on August 21st, a couple of weeks ago, although plans are in the works to have it sound specially on important occasions such as Remembrance Sunday. That was from the Smithsonian Magazine. Speaking of London, the Museum of Photography is coming to London. The 89,000-square-foot photography venue located near the Whitechapel Gallery will be run by the Swedish organization Fotografiska, which founded a similar museum in Stockholm in 2010. Oh, coming up, Barcelona readies for Gallery Weekend. 24 galleries are participating in the third edition of Barcelona's Gallery Weekend, September 28th through October 1st, 2017. The event will also present artistic interventions across the city and an exhibition exploring the private collections of local gallerists.
Gallerists,
yes.
Plural.
More Confederate statues removed. Four statues dedicated to Confederate leaders were removed across Baltimore, Maryland last night and transported out of town by a squad of police cars. The violence over Robert E. Lee statue in Charlottesville has accelerated plans to remove the remaining Old South imagery from public spaces around the country. Now, that was from the New York Times. Now, what's interesting, have you heard about this whole push against Columbus? They're trying to take down statues of Columbus?
I understand why.
Yeah, I know. I mean, he came here and pillaged and, you know, and Indians and all that stuff. So that's interesting. Oh, here's one. Holocaust Memorial in Boston is vandalized again. A Massachusetts teen has been charged with throwing a rock at the New England Holocaust Memorial and shattering a glass panel.
Wow. So every time someone throws a rock nowadays, it's a new story?
It's not in Palestine, but it's here in Massachusetts, and it was at one of its 54-foot tall towers. A Roxbury man caused similar damage to the monument in June. So this is an ongoing thing.
People throwing rocks at the Holocaust.
It's kind of an anti-Jewish, anti-Semitic.
Well, I understand. It's one dude throwing a rock, though.
U.S. Capitol has more Confederate monuments than statues of black people.
Well, that's appropriate because it wasn't the U.S. Capitol built by black people.
Cities across the country are removing Confederate monuments from public spaces, but the U.S. Capitol remains full of them. There are 12 statues commemorating Confederate soldiers and politicians in the National Statuary Hall collection, three times the number of statues of black people in the entire complex. That's from the Washington Post.
You know, I think maybe they should create a place where all those statues could live.
That's what they're
forever?
Thinking. I mean, some art historians are saying that they should just remove them all. We'll keep them historically somewhere in some sort of, like, you know, racist and segregationist park.
Right, we have that the mountainside.
We have 447 acres.
Well, South Dakota, they have that big thing. It's
called Mount Rushmore?
Yeah, we can just put them down the road there. And yeah.
If you want to go out to Bismarck, you can take a look at them.
Bismarck is a wonderful town.
Have you been there?
I have not.
Okay. So you're just going by what you've heard.
I have a close
friend. You don't have any friends. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You have a friend in Bismarck?
I have an acquaintance from the Dakotas, and I'm glad that you pointed out that he's really not my friend. I'm feeling a little sober right now. Continue.
Okay. National Gallery's art not actually insured.
What?
The National Gallery's chair, Hannah Rothschild, this is a famous name, has disclosed that the London Gallery's holdings are too expensive to insure, leaving the collection, quote, really vulnerable, unquote. In fact, none of the United Kingdom's national institutions, including the Tate, can afford to insure their works and must rely on security measures to protect them instead. I mean, that was printed in the Telegraph.
Oh, well, that's kind of, I guess, an error thing, right?
It's kind of amazing.
No, because the artwork is worth so much that
we can't afford to insure it and pay those premiums or whatever.
Terrorists could come in and spray paint on them.
I mean, now that I've revealed it on this show, you heard it here. Donald Trump won't attend the Kennedy Center Honors. You heard about that, right?
No, I did not.
Donald and Melania Trump will skip this year's Kennedy Center Honors, quote, to allow the honorees to celebrate without any political distraction, unquote.
Good for him.
The decision comes after members of the White House Arts Committee resigned en masse. You read about that, right?
No, I did not.
I have an article on that one. That one's next. We'll read about that if we can get to it.
We got 10 minutes.
Okay, the gold toilet is leaving the Guggenheim.
Oh.
I mean, we talked about that several times on the show.
I thought a rapper had to go toilet.
Well, no, or DT.
DT?
Yeah, the guy in the White House. He probably has a gold toilet, too.
Let's not go there.
All right. The gold toilet is leaving Guggenheim. Maurizio Catalan's fully functional 18-karat gold toilet.
Is that because his supposed decomposition doesn't smell?
No. It's just because he's really into gold.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Okay. Maurizio Catalan's fully functional 18-karat gold toilet installed in a single-occupancy restroom at the Guggenheim Museum since last year will be removed on September 15th. I really wanted to see that. I had a plan to go to New York in August. It just didn't come out.
Can't you just spray a regular toilet gold?
This is solid 18-karat gold. No, it's not the same.
Okay.
Quote, more than 100,000 people have waited patiently in line for the opportunity to commune with art and with nature. The
museum's
Nancy Spector notes. That's from the New York Times. Philadelphia to install new public sculpture. As Confederate monuments come down, new works of public sculpture are going up. Philadelphia City Hall is erecting a 12-foot bronze sculpture of black educator, activist, and ballplayer Octavius V. Cato, who was murdered by a white mob in 1871. To be unveiled September 26, 2017, the statue is the city's first public artwork honoring an individual African-American on public land. That was written in the Philadelphia Inquiry.
Enquirer.
A long-lost Banksy discovery discovered a Banksy work that first appeared on a public toilet block 10 years ago before being vandalized and painted over has been rediscovered at a London building site. A snorting copper shows a policeman on all fours snorting a line of cocaine. The owners of the disused site plan to restore the work and return it to its original home in East London this fall. It's kind of cool. I saw an image of it. It's fabulous. It's amazing. Professor resigns over support from Tate benefactor. A professor at Oxford University's Blavatnik School of Government has resigned after discovering that the school's benefactor, Len Blavatnik, was also a major backer of the new Tate Modern Extension, made a significant contribution to Donald Trump's inauguration. It was an art review, so he resigned over that, just freaked. Notre Dame gargoyles need 100 million euros.
I'm not surprised.
The iconic Pars Cathedral is in trouble. Its gargoyles and Gothic arches are crumbling. The Archbishop of Paris has started a major fundraising campaign to fund its restoration. That was written in The Guardian.
They're such tramps.
And here's a LA blurb to end this.
Okay.
The Underground Museum wins
the Underground Museum in Los Angeles?
Correct.
Sorry, yeah, I think
it's on Venice. It's really important.
Yes.
The Underground Museum wins the Ellsworth Kelly Award. The Los Angeles space will use the $40,000 prize dedicated to supporting shows at regional institutions to stage the first U.S. exhibition of the work of painter Abe Ododina. The show is slated for the spring of 2019. That was in Art News. So we've got just a few minutes left. We've got all this
we're
stuff.
We're still in blurbs, or we're out of blurbs.
Well, how about this one? The Tale of Two Leos. DiCaprio to play Da Vinci in Hollywood biopic. The actor and collector, who's named after the Renaissance polymath, is fulfilling his destiny. This is August 14th. It's a match made in Hollywood heaven. Actor Leonardo DiCaprio will play Renaissance polymath Leonardo da Vinci in a film based on a biography written by Walter Isaacson, set to be published in October. According to Deadline, there's been a furious seven-figure bidding war for the rights to the book between Paramount and Universal, with Paramount, which has expressed its interest earlier, finally prevailing. Has the Hollywood star been waiting for this moment all his life? It is, in fact, his birthright. DiCaprio combines his triumphant film career with serious art collecting and a host of philanthropic initiatives. Was, in fact, named after the Italian painter and scientist. According to Tinseltown lore, Leo's pregnant mother was looking at a Da Vinci painting in an Italian museum when he kicked in her belly for the first time, and so his name was determined.
Wow.
We'll have to wait until the film's released.
That hardly ever happens.
Oh, just because you were standing in front of the bust of, you know, Adolf or something, you know, whatever. We'll have to wait until the film's released to find out whether we'll get to see DiCaprio tackling the canvas to paint the Mona Lisa or the Last Supper, or dipping a pen in ink to draw the iconic Vitruvian Man, but one can only hope. What's certain is that the actor is keen on having as much control as he can on the final product. The biopic will be produced by Appian Way, the company founded by DiCaprio himself that has produced films like The Revenant, The Wolf on Wall Street, and The Ides of March. To write the book that will be adapted into the film, Isaacson, who's also written best-selling biographies of Stephen Jobs and Einstein, immersed himself in Da Vinci's notebooks, creating a narrative that weaves together his artistic and scientific endeavors. According to the press release by the publishers, the genius was also, quote, a bit of a misfit, illegitimate, gay, vegetarian, left-handed, easily distracted, and at times heretical.
Yeah, I'm just trying to understand how that becomes a movie.
Well, he's kind of fabulous. So.
You know something? He is left-handed, so.
Who, Leo?
Well, which Leo?
No, I'm not sure. Which one are you referring to?
I always referring to the original Leo.
Yeah. Well,
he was pretty good. By the way, he was Italian.
He was. Here's the White House Arts Committee quits en masse over Trump's support of hate groups and terrorists.
Oh, yes. We heard about this earlier.
A group of 16 high-profile artists, authors, performers, and architects serving on the President's Committee of the Arts and Humanities resigned. The en masse departures were part of an active protest against Trump's defense of white nationalists following last week's violent clashes in Charlottesville, Virginia. And that was a couple of weeks ago. The group is an advisory committee to the White House that works with the National Endowment of the Arts, National Endowment for the Humanities, and Institute of Museum and Library Sciences. Library Services. It particularly focuses on matters of art education and cultural exchange. In an open letter to the president shared on Twitter by the actor Cal Penn, the committee's departing private members make their reasoning plain. Reproach and censure in the strongest possible terms are necessary following your support of the hate groups and terrorists who killed and injured fellow Americans in Charlottesville. The false equivalencies you push cannot stand. There's a lot more to be said on that. Should we just go to some music? We'll leave it at that, folks. I mean, we could talk more.
No, I'm having so much fun, but
you want to hear more about that?
Well, yeah. I mean, we have a limited amount of time, but you know.
All right. So, and here, after mass resignation from the Arts Committee, Trump announces he planned to dissolve it anyway. Quote: While the committee has done good work in the past, in its current form, it simply is not a responsible way to spend American tax dollars.
I just love the way he fires people after they quit.
Correct.
That's just amazing.
I mean, it's just...
It's just like art copies life. I mean, it's like...
Right.
It's
they
like,
all quit. You're and then fired. Said, well, I was going to fire you anyway.
He had a television show where he fired everybody, and now in real life, everyone quits, so he's just pretending to
fire
them all.
Well, yeah, I would have fired you all anyway. New York Times culture writer Sopran Deb first posted the announcement on Twitter, triggering a tidal wave of mockery at the president, including from actor and former committee member Cal Penn, who had originally posted the open letter saying, laugh out loud, you can't break us up after we broke up with you. So, in other words, that's what he's been doing. He just, after people quit, he goes, well, I was firing you anyway.
It makes sense because that's what he does.
Yeah, that's his MO right there. I mean, I'm never to be outdone by anyone.
Not my fault.
So we're going to end the show with that kind of haphazardly, but there it is. And we're going to play some music. And Gus, what are we going to play?
Well, we're going to be playing Sonic Youth, Hey Joni. But do you have some shout-outs you want to give out?
I did. I wanted to shout-out to everyone. Just, again, really happy Labor Day and love to all of
Labor
our friends and our listeners. And wishing you a really good, you know, the rest of the year. It's all
okay.
For good things.
I like that.
Yeah.
Hey Joni.
Hey Joni, put it all behind.